Welcome to The Drummer's Pathway, the podcast about music, life, and the creative process. Hello, I'm Michael Scott, and welcome to The Drummer's Pathway podcast. This episode features my conversation with drummer Davide Dorenzo. Based out of Toronto, Davide is highly regarded as one of Canada's most versatile and in-demand drummers. He has performed and recorded around the world with a wide range of artists, including Cassandra Wilson, Jack Soul, Tom Cochran, Tommy Swick, Holly Cole, David Wilcox, Molly Johnson, and many more. In addition to his extensive studio experience working with some of the world's top artists, Davide also works out of his home studio where he records and sends drum tracks to artists and producers all over the globe. In our conversation, we talk about the role positive studio etiquette plays, assuring that each session runs effectively. We also discuss why it's essential to maintain a growth mindset and explore each new learning opportunity to let go of our own self-doubt and embrace our potential. And now, my conversation with Davide Dorenzo. You discovered an interest in drums at a young age, and through years of dedication to your craft and through numerous opportunities, you have established a career as a highly respected and sought-after drummer. As a freelance musician, we often find ourselves in a variety of different situations and scenarios. What's keeping you busy these days?
Well, first of all, it's nice to meet you, Michael. And I'm honored. So thank you for connecting. Let's just sort of go back to your question with regards to, is it basically you're asking what I'm up to or what I've been up to or what's keeping me busy?
Yeah, what's keeping you busy as a drummer these days? In the freelance career, we're always looking at different situations. Yeah. And each week is different from the previous week. So what are you working on these days?
You know, it's a combination of recording with some artists that I've been lucky to be with for quite some time. So, for instance, next week I'll be doing a couple of days in the studio with an artist that I've been with for a long time that I'm really excited about. I'm actually going to be attending a listening party tomorrow night for a record that I did with also Kippen, another artist that I've been lucky to work with for the last couple of decades. I just had a rehearsal this morning with an artist that I've also known for a very long time. You know, just a lot of different kind of things, like with regards to stylistic groups, it's a wide range of like rock to jazz to Canadiana. I'm not even sure if that's actually a genre, but I'm going to call it Canadiana. You know, singer-songwriter kind of thing. It's like a wide range of stuff, and I've been very, very lucky because it sort of inspires different things in my both my playing and also, you know, spiritually too, you know?
I think one of the things that I always admired about you is that in addition to your dedication to being a world-class drummer, you are also an avid musician that has a passion for different styles. And I think it's music is what has dictated who you have become as an artist, as opposed to the drums.
Well, thank you. It's always hard to sort of, you know, kind of has a sort of a self-perception. I'm not really even sure sometimes how to respond to that. But I think at the end of the day, I remember even as a young kid, like I think being wowed by drum solos and stuff like that. But where I would get the goosebumps, you know, the goosies was when I would just hear a pocket. And I would actually hear the entire song, like lyrically, melodically, even though I wasn't really understanding the harmony of what was going on, I was really interested in the big picture. And where the drums actually fit in that picture. You know, that was the thing that really turned me on almost from the get-go. And you go through this journey and this phase where, you know, okay, I play drums. Well, I guess if I play drums, then I got to really check out Dave Weckl, and I got to learn how to, you know, play these fills and chops. And these are all very important, you know, parts in your development with regards to like checking a bunch of stuff out. But really deep down inside, you know, respectfully, it didn't really turn me on as much as, you know, when I would hear Levon Helm play, would hear Jim Gordon, some of Jim Gordon's recordings, or, you know, Steve Gadd, like the list goes on and on and on. And it's not to say that I didn't have a respect for the muscle drumming and the pyrotechnics and all that stuff. I still think it's really incredible. But to sort of mirror what you said, my interest was always in the music, always. It was not specific to the drums, really, you know?
I've always been a huge fan of drummers in a whole bunch of different genres, and I have quite a vast collection of music, but I love the live music experience. And for me, one of the most iconic moments, actually, two iconic moments for me as a drummer that really profoundly changed my approach was, I think in the early 90s, I went to see Paul Simon on the Rhythm of the Saints tour, and Steve Gadd was playing drums. And at one point, there was an instrumental break, and then Steve Gadd took a drum solo. And there was probably 30,000 people at the show that could not stop dancing to the feel and the impact that his solo had. And he didn't do anything that was technically really advanced from our perspective. But as you and I know, as a musician, you start to realize that some of the most technical challenges to play are often the most simplistic. And that's really where a lot of power from music comes into play. And I remember just being really blown away, because at the time I was in college, and so I had to learn all of the advanced stuff. And then it helped to reconnect me back to what was really essential, and that was groove and how that music made you feel. And the second example of that also involved Steve Gadd. And I remember going to see him at the Sky Dome, and he was playing with Eric Clapton. And at one point, he's playing this really simple groove, but he played this little offbeat shot that he just kind of accented. And then everyone in the section that I was in kind of just jumped, and people couldn't tell what it was that had happened, but there was a moment on stage that was subtle and beautiful that affected people. And I think for me, I'm trying to reconnect back to how music affects me and how it makes me feel, as opposed to really getting hung up on the technical aspects of things.
I mean, again, I don't want to discredit or badmouth, like, you know, we all go through this journey in our different ways, you know, but at the end of the day, I think it's really important to, you know, check in with yourself and, you know, really ask yourself what it is that kind of turns you on to. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think as freelance musicians, you go through this, again, this journey where it's important to investigate all of these styles and investigate all of these players and whatnot, musical groups. And that's all very important. But I think it also is very, you know, if the chops thing is your thing, all the power to you, like for real. And I mean that. But if we're speaking, it's like you and I one-on-one, you know, there's a lot of, you know, drummers that absolutely blow me away. So don't get me wrong. But for me, what's always turned me on is, again, the big picture. Like, and I think the older I'm getting, the more I'm realizing it more and more. Like, it's becoming, I think, maybe a lot clearer, I guess, if that makes sense, you know? And I don't feel like I have to make any excuses for it or anything like that, or be apologetic about it, you know?
It's the same sort of thing I have found in the experiences that I've had where I've got to go in and do some session work or play on different recordings. If I listen back to something that I've done and I hear me, then I find that to be a distraction. If I listen back to the playback and I hear the piece as a big picture, then I know I did the right job. And for me, I'm as a player, I'm trying to take away some of the embellishments that as a younger musician who's going through these phases, you're always trying to add these components and add these little complexities. You start to subtract them as you mature as a player. And I find for me, I'm getting more joy out of the simplistic aspect when I get called to do work rather than always trying to kind of impress the other drummers in the room.
Yeah, I mean, I think that takes a lot of maturity and it takes a lot of years and hours of playing. And I think we can all relate, you know, you're playing in a club or whatever kind of venue and, you know, one or two drummers show up that you recognize and, you know, immediately like your first reaction is, you know, and it's, you know, which is, I guess, a natural sort of reaction. I get it. But you're right. I think there comes a point where you get to a certain age and stage and you celebrate, you celebrate their presence, you know, them being there, and you feed on their vibe and you try to be as present as possible in the music rather than feel like you're being, you know, pulled in different directions. I think that therein lies another strong sort of, point, as far as the stuff that I've been kind of working on is really being as present as possible, you know, but really being present, you know. I had a buddy not long ago, same kind of thing. We talked about this, but this sort of ties into what you're saying. I mean, if you're concerned about who's in the audience, you're not present with regard. I mean, you're present with regards to, maybe some of your anxiety or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, regards to who's in the audience. But as far as being present in the music is what I'm saying. I mean, you're no longer present in the music because all you're thinking about is, you know, what you think you should be doing in order to either A, impress that person or, you know, make some kind of a statement, you know.
Well, and along that lines, sometimes there's situations that were put in, whether it be a recording session or a gig, where as an artist, we kind of get put in roles where we have to be a puzzle piece to connect all the pieces together, mm-hmm. or we're presented a canvas where collectively we get to paint and create a moment and create an experience. And I find sometimes as a session player, there are times when you are told what to do, you're given a part, and your job is not really about you per se, but your job is to come in and play that part of the puzzle so you can connect these pieces so the person can check off everything and say everything is done. And sometimes in those situations, you know, you take everything very seriously and you want to do everything at a high level, but you feel like you're just part of a piece, and once your piece is done, you feel a disconnect. And other times you're put in situations where you're told to collectively find a moment and to create and kind of build upon those experiences. And that's when I find that you can really kind of be present in the music, where it's not just about getting the part done and then moving on to the next thing. If I go into a studio situation and we're really, really well prepared, I play at a fairly high level, but I'm concerned about making sure that I get my part correct. And then there's other studio situations where I go in and you, in essence, haven't heard the music in advance. You haven't met the people in advance. And at that point, it's a moment and an experience. And you collectively now are kind of in that moment where you really now get to create. And I find for me, those often tend to be some of the best sessions and some of the playing that I'm most proud of, because I'm not concerned about perfection. I'm concerned about finding the right moment within that experience.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it's funny, you know, I'm listening to you and thinking about all of the different situations, you know, that you potentially run into. And I guess at the end of the day, you just gotta, I think it's important to, you know, we talk about being present. Sometimes it's about being present with regards to what they want you to do, you know, mm-hmm. what it is that they want you to do, and you do the best possible job, and your you know, your job description you know, changes, obviously. It always seems to be different, to be honest. It always seems to be like sort of a different day, unless of course you're working with a band that you've known for a long time and you kind of have an idea of what you might expect. But I would say like the majority of time, it always seems new and different. I mean, just like playing live, you know? But I hear what you're saying, and I can totally understand that. And I get it. Like, there's something to be said about, you know, this carte blanche kind of approach where someone says, like when they actually mean, like, I hired you for a reason because I like what you do. Sometimes people say that, but they don't really mean that, like, because plan, you know, they have a plan, or they have a charts, or they've demoed these tunes and they want the exact drum groove and fills, and, you know, and I've experienced those. I know you have as well. And I'm almost positive a bunch of people that are listening to this, can attest to that as well. But I guess what I'm getting at too is, you know, if you are in those situations, you still have to be as present as possible, and you do the best possible job you can, you know, ultimately.
I once got hired by a recording engineer to work with this project. And the engineer had said to me, I'm recommending you for two reasons. One of them is that the band has got everything put together and they've got all of the parts programmed. So they want someone to come in to, in essence, replace all of the program parts exactly. And if I say that you're going to do that, I trust you that you are actually going to show up prepared to do that. That's one of the reasons why I'm referring you to this. And I also know that you know how to navigate personalities. And so that's one of the other reasons why I can put you in that scenario, that it may be a situation that some people may find to be challenging, but I know that you can go in and make everything work. And so that's also the thing. It's not about just being always prepared in terms of the parts. It's about your perception of the situation and how to navigate the personalities in the room.
Oh, Michael, you just brought up two points that, like, I mean, you know, it's not very often that you can find someone that would be able to walk into a room and basically mimic someone's drum part, because sometimes their drum parts can be very tricky. And if somebody has that much confidence in you, then, you know, you're looking at a much smaller pool of people that can do that. So, I mean, you know, that's pretty incredible, you know, as far as I'm concerned. Now, you bring up the intangible factors, right? So the tangible factors are the fact that you can actually play the stuff. The intangible, are you talking about vibe and getting along? Now, I've said this for years. Nobody wants to work with an asshole. Nobody wants to tour with an asshole. So, and that hasn't changed. You know, you come into a recording studio situation where someone is hiring you to play on their songs. I mean, first of all, what an amazing honor that is. But if you're being hired to contribute to the good vibes in the room, wow, that becomes a smaller pool as far as I'm concerned, because now we're talking again about the intangibles that my first drum teacher taught me about many, many, many years ago. So yeah, man, good on you to get called to for those two reasons. That's incredible.
And one of the things that I've learned is that as a freelance musician that has some experience working in a studio environment, we often get called to work with musicians that have a lot of experiences playing live. And then they go into the studio. And as you and I know, the studio and the stage can be very different environments. And someone can be very confident on the stage, walk into the microscope of the recording studio, and then suddenly all they see is their insecurities magnified. And it makes it really difficult for them because they're out of their comfort zone. And so one of the things that I have found is that if I'm hired to do something, I will go out of my way to try and be positive. I will go out of my way to encourage them to keep the vibe of the room up, because as confidence goes down, the day becomes very long and the results that you get tend to be sometimes not satisfactory or unusable. So I always want to try and just, you know, bring up the positivity in the room and to make it a good experience, because everyone's coming from different backgrounds and everyone has different experiences, but you collectively have to make the project work as a whole.
Well, and you know, and good on you. And I get that. And sometimes the reality is, like, people get cut from a session. I've witnessed it. I've actually been there where I'm not going to, obviously I won't get specific with even, the instrument, but you know, with all due respect to the people and all people involved, but it is a pretty intense place to be. And this was an amazing musician, but just wasn't getting the vibe of the song, and the producer was not, just didn't have time. Like, the producer had come up from the States, and so he had to sort of produce this soon. He wanted to hit the ground running, basically, and the person had to leave. We all had to sort of be supportive, but also realize, you know, as much as you want that vibe to be positive and stuff, sometimes it can cut the tension with a knife. And so again, but it doesn't happen often, don't get me wrong, but I think it sort of sheds light on the fact that, you know, there's some sessions that can be pretty cutthroat, you know, pretty scary. And if you can bring in a nice vibe, again, that's just like, what a huge bonus that is.
I've often found for me that sometimes the most successful sessions have been the ones where you show up on time and the engineer gets drum sounds in 5 to 10 minutes, and then they get guitar sounds in 5 or 10 minutes, and within half an hour everything's ready to go. And we've also been in scenarios where you go in and 2 hours after you get there, you're still working on a bass drum sound and you're still working on a snare drum sound, because everyone's so busy talking about how amazing the studio is and how amazing all of the previous projects that they have done that they've actually neglected to actually put that energy into the project at hand. And sometimes those can be situations that can be difficult to navigate at times.
Well, you know, you had mentioned it earlier, you know, it can make for a very long day, right? So I've always, you know, the word flow always comes to mind. And I always find the right sort of the sessions that flow the best are, you know, when everybody's pretty much on the same page with regards to, like, getting down to, like, getting some good work done, but also knowing when to take a break. This is a very interesting thing that I've never really brought up, but where in the handbook did somebody write, if you're recording for 12 hours, there's no food or no food break? Where does that make sense at all? Like, food, drink, break, all of those things fuel your soul, it gives you the opportunity to stop and chat with the people that you're working with. Maybe you've never met them, they get to know you, you get to know them. These are very important moments in a recording studio day, for speaking specifically, you know, with regards to recording. And I find a lot of producers, like, I understand that time is money, I get that, but budget the time correctly, in my humble opinion. Like, you know, don't budget 10 songs in a day. Like, you know, it, to me, it just doesn't make sense unless you can budget 10 songs in the day. But yeah, you have to kind of look at the day and go, where are we going to take a break? How long are we going to take this break? And also realize that these breaks are very essential in the final outcome of, you know, the day's proceedings with regards to the recording and the vibe. I've been in countless situations where no one's eaten and you're on your fourth or fifth song and people are getting grumpy. And then it's like, well, what, you know, what are you getting upset for? Like, you know, producer's going, hey, like, can I talk to you for a second? Like, what's up? Like, what, you know, dude, like, you got to give people a break. You got to give people breaks. You got to give them a chance to eat and fuel up. And trust me, the end result will be that much better. It's a very interesting thing, you know?
And the break also allows the musicians involved to reconnect. As the day goes on, there starts to become a disconnect. And so sometimes you need to stop, bring the tensions down, reconnect collectively, get back on the same page, and then come back in and create magic.
Well, give your ears a break. I mean, think about that. You've got headphones on, so you have music coming at you. You know, 90% of the time, it's pretty loud. Like, you're playing drums, and I mean, again, like, if you're playing something soft, whatever. The point is that you're getting a lot of information coming at you all the time. You need to give your ears a break. I mean, I really try and make a point. Again, maybe this is like an age thing where I go, you know, hey, friends, I need to take a break. Like, I need to grab some food. Like, can I just jump out for a half hour, you know, 20 minutes, whatever. I do my best at, like, if there is a break, I don't stay in the studio. Like, I go outside.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I go for a walk. If it means just even around the block, like, just to clear my head. And it's amazing. You come back and you feel refreshed. And ultimately, I feel like I'm firing on all, you know, all pistons are firing, you know, like, again, funny that people don't really understand how detrimental that is if you don't take breaks. Like, I was going to just mention, I'm not going to do it. I won't do it. But yeah.
One of the things we'd sort of started out with as well is I talked about how you kind of started this at a young age, but around 18, you actually went from Toronto area to Los Angeles and you studied at the Dick Grove School of Music. What inspired you to make that decision?
I had the opportunity to go to Berklee College of Music in Boston. And I was awarded a scholarship to go there, in fact. And I respectfully turned it down. And here's why. A couple of things happened. The one and only time I purchased a Modern Drummer magazine, and I swear on this, and it was Randy Castillo was the cover of, he was on the cover of the Modern Drummer magazine. Issue that I purchased at our local music store in Guelph, Ontario, at Guelph Music, in fact. And, you know, I memorized every page because it was the only Modern Drummer magazine I ever had read through. And so, there was this one page that was promoting the Dick Grove School of Music, and the motto basically read, today, an ear for music is not enough. Enroll to the Dick Grove School of Music and change your life, or something like this. And it truly did. And I'll tell you why I decided to go. At that time, I would have been 17 years old, and I met Paul DeLong at Music Fest. He was a clinician, and I can't remember how I got his number, but I got his number, and I went and I had one lesson with him, and it was awesome. I absolutely adore the man. I have a ton of respect for him. on so many levels. And he's been very inspirational over the years. And I told him about this opportunity because he knew that I had gotten a scholarship. I reminded him of this some time ago, and he forgot. But he basically said, wait a second. You have an opportunity to go to Los Angeles as opposed to Boston? And I said, yeah. And he goes, go to L.A. He goes, go to Los Angeles. And I thought, oh, well, wow, okay. So, I mean, that's how the decision kind of happened. I went down to audition, and it was a one-year program. And Michael, it was a game changer for me. It actually changed my entire trajectory as a musician on this planet. And I can go into detail about it, but the point is that it was kind of a perfect storm, you know, for me. I was 18 when I went, and I lived there for a couple of years, and it was just like one mind-blasting moment after another mind-blasting moment after another. You know, it was just inundated with sort of the scene and going to hear a bunch of people, but also, you know, the faculty was insane. So I was practicing like a madman, and just immersed myself in such a huge way, you know? So yeah, that was a game changer for me, for sure.
Now, without getting into all of the specifics in terms of all the classes and courses and things that you took, was there any life-changing takeaways from that experience that sort of stuck with you throughout your career that really helped to define who you are?
No. And I'm sorry to be such a bummer, sort of a bummer of an answer, but honestly, Michael, it was a sort of the collection of meeting people from all over the world. You know, it was the first time I had ever left home. It was the first time I'd ever had to like really cook for myself and clean and do my laundry. And like it was all of those things, you know, that added to the experience as well. You know, I felt like I sort of, you know, really matured in a huge way in a very short amount of time. I was also living in Van Nuys, where there were a lot of gangs and a lot of gang violence. And I was born and raised in Guelph, you know?
Yes.
So these were experiences that, again, were life-changing, life-altering, that contributed to the entire experience. You know, the school had, for instance, two recording studios that we were able to use all the time. So I was, you know, sort of not really knowing, but I was grooming myself as a very young kid, like to put the headphones on and go, okay, we're going to record it. You would hear the playback and you'd scrutinize, and then you would go back in. And I had this one class where we weren't allowed to look at the chart until just before the tape rolled. And Joel DeBartolo would have been my teacher at the time in that class. And he was the upright bass player for the Doc Severinsen band, the Johnny Carson show at the time. So, you know, I was very lucky, very fortunate to have that experience. And so that was a mind-blasting moment as well, where, okay, turn your pages, you know, flip your pages over, have a glance at the chart. Here's the click, and we're rolling, you know? What an amazing experience as an 18-year-old. It's like, what? You know, amazing. I had, you know, Latin hand percussion classes with Brian Kilgore, and, you know, Luis Conte would come in and do master classes with, oh my gosh, the original drummer for the Weather Report. Was he the original drummer? The one before, why can't I think of his name?
Wasn't Alex Acuna.
Yes, exactly. It was Alex Acuna. Mind-blasting moments where he described in a masterclass, I mean, there'd be like 10 or 12 people in this room, right? And there's Alex Acuna. I'm like, oh my God. And, you know, someone was asking him about Brazilian music. And he said, oh, well, when I think of Brazilian music, I think of an egg rolling. And I'm 18 years old. That changed my life with regards to how I approach, you know, playing samba or bossa or something. You know what I mean? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Moments that mind blasting.
I had almost exactly the same experience taking a lesson with Mark Kelso, because I had gone to Mark and I had said to him, you have a passion for samba and Brazilian music that I don't have. And I don't have the experience to really play the stuff correctly. So I want you to go through and I want you to teach me your perspective. And in essence, it's the same sort of thing. He talked about the egg rolling, how it changes the whole feel. And he talked about the political culture of things. And we had a conversation for about 20 minutes about the culture and all these things that had nothing to do about here's exercise one. This is what you play in a bass drum. We just talked and he had music playing in the background. And then after about 10 minutes into our conversation, he's like, stand up. And he's handing me an egg shaker. And we're having a conversation while I'm playing this egg shaker while there's Brazilian music quietly playing in the background. And after we stand up and we're still having this conversation. And he said to me, your body is now starting to move, whether you're aware of it or not, to the music that's playing in the background. Until you physically start to feel that experience, you can't sit behind a drum and actually play this stuff because you don't understand the heart and the soul of this stuff. And it was profound. And so then when I came home and then started to go through all of the lessons and things that I had before that really didn't connect with me, it suddenly had a completely different experience.
Oh, what an amazing educator that guy is. I mean, besides the fact that he's so incredible. You know, it's funny. I went to hear him play the other, like I was playing this 5:30 slot at the Rex on Saturday. And then he was playing the 8 o'clock or 8:30 slot or whatever. And we had a nice chat. It was nice to see him again. And promised my family I'd come home soon after the gig, but I was like, I'm going to stick around and hear a few tunes. And it was his Jazz Exiles band and they were incredible. Man, what a ferocious, beautiful player. I mean, wow, crazy. I loved it.
And I think one of the reasons why he's such an exceptional player is that he's such a genuinely kind guy. He's such an amazing human being. And one of the things that I have found as I've gotten older and started to work in different sort of experiences is that I want to work with people that I have a positive personal connection with over a collection of people that have an exceptional skill set, but just have a disconnect. And it's like, I'm not looking for drama in my life now. I'm looking for joy.
Yeah, I hear that so often now, which is so nice. It's so nice to hear. I get it. And that resonates with me as well. You know, people talk about mental health a lot, especially these days. And, you know, if it contributes to your mental health in a positive way, then do it because it's totally worth it. You know, if it means cutting out some things that maybe, again, don't resonate with you, then you realize maybe it's just not worth it. You know, and maybe you're opening the door to something else that you're not sure of yet, but that's something just around the corner, you know?
I know for me, going back a number of years ago, one of the challenges that I was having was the anxiety of filling my calendar over feeding my soul. And so one of the things that I had to do was that I had to kind of back away from some scenarios that were all positive, but at the time were just not the things that I was seeking. So I had to kind of take a step back so that I could reignite and find my creative passion and find why I wanted to do all of this stuff. And then I started to embrace situations that I had kind of walked away from before in a better headspace. And I got a lot more out of the opportunities.
Yeah. And you feel like you're ready for it. It's like, it's sort of that you're in that genuine space. But I also, you know, I also believe that, you know, I've mentioned this before, it kind of all depends on, you know, where you're at in your journey. Right. And I think it is important to take all those gigs. I mean, absolutely. I definitely did it and it was very beneficial. That being said, I also knew a bunch of people that sort of had their thing realized at a very young age and just went, they just beelined, you know, right to whatever it is that they still do to this day. And I think that's really amazing too. I was so interested in all of it, you know, like I just wanted to sort of gobble it all up, you know. I was very curious about it all, I guess. And then you go through this process and you go, maybe that music doesn't really resonate. Or maybe that personality, there's a little bit of a clash there. And you start to realize, again, it depends on where you are in your journey, but you start to realize that it's way more important to check in with yourself and go, am I putting out my best self, you know, or am I just exhausting myself? And sometimes you have to take a multitude of gigs, we got to pay, everyone's got to pay their bills. So it's not like you can just choose whatever you want. I guess it depends on what kind of financial situation you're in as well. I don't guess, I know. So that affects this whole conversation too, you know?
Well, I know one of the things that I had struggled with actually fairly recently was trying to find time in my life to feed my creative spirit, to spend time in my home studio, to spend time trying to write some music. And I found for me, because I had all these life distractions, that I always would kind of put them first. And I would say, okay, once I complete the things on this list, then I'm going to devote the rest of my free time to the things that really excite me. And one of the things that was pointed out to me that I had to learn, which was quite profound, was that by putting the things that are most important to you at the end of the list, you, in essence, no longer have the time or the energy to do those things. So you have to shift your life around. And so I'm not saying that some things don't become priority, but you have to make you and the things that you want the priorities in your life, and the other things, the life commitments, get taken care of as well. But you have to kind of find that balance. And that's something that I think everyone sort of struggles with, is just finding that balance. You know, you have a wife and you have four young children. So I'm quite sure that there's, you know, having to find a career life balance challenge frequently. And so how do you manage that?
Well, I, you know, ultimately, I really have a very supportive wife. That's huge. That's sort of my first answer. It's a very difficult question. You know, like I've wanted to make some changes because I realized I was missing out a lot. I was on tour all the time. I was away a lot. And I wanted to sort of jump off the road for a while after the pandemic. Like I knew that when things opened up again, it was most likely going to sort of resume-ish. It had, you know what I mean? And I've kind of tried to make some decisions to take a little bit of more of a back seat in that regard and jump in the front with my kids more. And it's been a real educational and beautiful experience for the most part. You know, it's also very challenging when you're so used to being a music head. But I realized how important it was to also clock in important time with my family, because that time goes by so quickly, you know? It happens fast. So I don't really know. Like I just try and balance it. I try and figure it out. You know, Michael, it's not really sure how to answer it. I think it's different for everybody. But I guess what I do is I look at my book, because I still have a book, mm-hmm. and see where my wife is working, and I see, you know, where the soccer practices and games are and the dance classes and the obviously school, and then you know, sort of extracurricular stuff, and I see where the pockets are, and I see if I can sort of fit stuff in there that makes sense. Like, you know, rehearsals can only be from 10 to noon because I got to pick up my son at, you know, preschool, kind of thing, right? Like these are, you know what I mean? So that's how you just try and fit it all in somehow without going too crazy.
Well, and the hope is that most days we get it right. Some days we don't, but we just do the best that you can. And when you have someone who is supportive of what you're doing, then the flip side of that is that you also need to be supportive of the things that they're doing. And I think when both partners in the relationship feel that they're valued, then yeah. I think that's one of the things that really helps to make this work better.
I got very lucky. I got very, very lucky.
As did I.
Right on. Yeah, Michael, right on.
What are some of the biggest lessons you learned from your children?
This is a very good question. One of the things, especially when they were a lot younger, is you see how open and unafraid they are. Like they just go for things. Like if they're going to jump, they're not thinking about, you know, what's going to happen. There's either faith or they don't know, but there's something very freeing about their approach to life. And that's been probably the most valuable lesson. I've been able to sort of relive my childhood in a lot of ways. And I've kind of approached music in this sort of new chapter as a parent playing music, in that way where you go in without any fear. And I think that's been sort of a very valuable lesson that they've taught me, is just go for it. And if, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, a broken arm, maybe, you know, if they're falling from some kind of play structure, which has also happened. But do you know what I mean? I'm talking about the mentality of having no fear.
Well, and with children, there's a curiosity aspect that's like they don't look at the what ifs. They just do it, and they just say, "Hey, what you know? Like, I'm just gonna see what this experience is like." And then as we get older, there's the what ifs, and the anxiety starts to kick in, and the self doubt. And I think sometimes we need to change our mindset and try and embrace back to being what it was like to be a child. You know, as an adult, if you want to learn a musical instrument, you talk yourself out of it because you say, I'm too old to do this. And the reality is you're not too old to do anything. You just have to want to do it. And so start, try, and don't be afraid of being judged, and don't be afraid of failing. Just live the experience.
Well, it's the growth mindset as opposed to the fixed mindset, right? Yep. I can give you another example. My kids were taking piano lessons, and our eldest daughter chose not to. She wanted to focus on soccer. And so two of our kids were taking lessons, and basically all three of them were taking lessons, and this teacher would come over. So I was like, do you mind if I take your slot? It's like, no. So I've been loving it. I've been taking piano lessons now for the last, you know, year. I've taken piano lessons in the past, but I've sort of started up again, and I'm absolutely loving it. You know, so there's another sort of, what have my children taught me? Well, there's another example. I mean, I can go on and on and on, but the growth mindset thing is like, that's how they come into this world, as far as I'm concerned, you know?
Now, you have worked with numerous artists throughout your career. Are there any people that you have worked with that you would consider to be a mentor to you?
So many, Michael. I mean, so many, like songwriters, you know, performers like Cassandra Wilson, Tom Cochran. I mean, yeah, again, I feel like I'm name dropping. I don't want to name drop. I'll name drop. Rob Pelch, Kevin Bright have been really, David Pelch. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It really does. I've been so effing lucky, Michael. Michael, I've been so lucky. I could cry right now because I've had so many amazing opportunities to work with these people. And I feel like every time I have these opportunities, David Wilcox is another one. Like, I learn something so profound every time I play with him. Every time. I walk away and I go, oh my God, I've been playing with them for 20 years. You know, blows me away. Sorry for the name dropping. But these are all incredible people that have really, really been super inspirational, you know, so grateful.
And what might be some of the lessons that you have learned from them?
Presence, listening, you know, like really listening. I remember playing a gig with Shirley Eichardt and Ed Bickert was the guitarist. And if I thought about it too, I would have been 23 years old or 24. If I thought about it too much, I would have fallen off my stool, right? But we were playing this Bravo special and he heard everything that was going on stage. Like I had him in my monitor and I was listening to him and I'm going, this guy is so dialed in. He's so dialed into everything that's going on. And then before you knew it, you wouldn't hear him. You wouldn't hear him. It was like quiet, stop playing. And then when he played something, it was so profound. When he stopped, it was so profound. But he was always in the service of the music, you know? And I think that's what's always kind of come back with all of these people that I've mentioned. And I've failed to mention so many other people, you know? But that's the sort of recurring theme, you know, is really being in the moment and listening and being a part of a family on stage, like really, like not playing against each other, but playing with each other, but really listening, you know?
Now to flip that question around, what are some challenges that you've had to face and how did you overcome them?
Well, I think one of the biggest ones was just being kinder to myself. That was a big challenge, like this sort of mentality growing up of like this sort of sense of perfection, you know? That's something that I really struggled with at one time for sure, like coming up, you know, that sort of insecurity. And maybe that's part of the process as well. But, you know, I just spoke with a dear friend of mine today. It was at this rehearsal on the way there. We talked about, you know, how we can be so self-deprecating. And I guess, you know, you being self-deprecating when you're sort of coming out of the gate, I get it, but you carry that into your adulthood and people just start to believe that you suck when you really don't. People believe that you suck and you believe that you suck. And so you're no longer in the music. And there's something that I've learned. It's almost like kicking, you know, a smoking habit or something. Is you just finally, you know, you butt it out and you go, like, F you, I'm done with you. I'm done with you. I'm done with that mentality. And the shackles come off. And before you know it, you're flying. It's a really beautiful experience. And it's not like I live it every day, but it's definitely, you know, something that I do think about a lot. And when that voice sort of comes up, I give it a swift kick, you know. And that's what I sort of encourage a lot of people that are listening to give it a good kick, because it's detrimental. It's not a good thing.
Are you able to look back at the work that you've done in the past, or once it's done, do you have to move on?
I have moments, you know, sometimes I'm forced to listen to stuff because I'm playing with people again, like after a number of years, I sort of refer back to the stuff that we did. And, I'm a lot kinder to myself now at this stage in my life. And I can really appreciate that sort of snapshot at that time. And, I have a few chuckles when I listen to it. And a lot of the times I can kind of remember what went down. A lot of the times I can't, you know, like, but, you know, for the longest time, I kind of refused to listen to myself. I don't go out of my way to listen to myself, but, I think it's important as a learning tool to be able to hear yourself without scrutinizing to the point where you say you suck, you know, where you just go, oh, okay, all right. Let me tweak that a little bit. And okay, I hear what's going on there. Like, I think it's important. Whereas in the past, I'd be very apprehensive to listen to myself, you know?
And the problem when we're in that headspace, when we're reflecting back on the work that we've done, is that we hear the moments that we would want to change. And we look at that as going, oh, I did a terrible job, because there might be one moment in it that we wish we could redo. And we're stuck to that moment. This might sound silly, but one of the things that I started doing is I started to listen to recordings that I've done. And in my mind, I would put someone else in the role of being a drummer. And I would say, if someone handed me this recording and said, hey, check this out, this is a new recording that this drummer played on, I would listen to it. And would I hear the mistake, or would I think it was cool? Do I only hear the mistake because it's a moment that I wish I could change, or is it actually a mistake? And then I realized at that point, it's just a creative moment, a creative decision, and not necessarily a mistake. For me, the biggest learning things that I have found as well is listening back to some of the work that I've done. It's made me a better musician, because I can go back and I can reflect and I can say, you know what? I hit a crash cymbal too many times in this one section. So I'm going to make a note of that. And the next time I do that, I'm going to be more prepared and I'm going to have a better big picture perspective. And I've started doing a lot of home recording as well. You know, as many people at the pandemic, you went from having access to recording studios and live gigs to nothing for a while. And so I made the decision in the downtime to actually set up a basic studio and try and learn how to record. I have a primitive setup here, but the learning and the growth that I've gotten because I've started to do that has been incredible. And I know that you have a studio at your house, and you've been active doing that for a number of years. So how do you find the process recording at home versus recording in a traditional studio?
The home studio experience has been a game changer for me. But truthfully, I was lucky. My dear friend that's no longer with us, Hayden Neal, he was the singer of Jack Soul. It was a band that I was in. Inspired me to get a recording setup going at a long time ago, when, you know, a lot of people maybe weren't doing that, you know, and it changed my life. Now, mind you, I wasn't super, I didn't take advantage of it in a huge way at the beginning. I was actually, to be honest, very intimidated, you know, with the equipment and not real, like, I'm not computer savvy, right? Like, not even close. I started getting more into it years later, and yeah, I started buying some really nice mic pre's, and I started kind of telling a couple people, and then before I knew it, like, people were coming over. Okay. And I would always hire an engineer. Okay, this one guy in particular, Charlie Finley, amazing. He would come in and he'd engineer all of the sessions. And it was great. Like, I could put my headphones on. He made sure that all the levels were right. Now, I didn't even know how to turn on most of the stuff. Mm-hmm. This is the honest to God truth, okay? The pandemic hits and now people are needing drum tracks because studios are closed. So my studio was never busier. It was actually it was like nuts, to be honest. Okay. But he couldn't come over because we were in the middle of the pandemic. And I remember the phone call. He said, you're going to have to do this on your own, man. Mm-hmm. Like, he kept encouraging me to, you know, you should learn how to use most of this stuff. Right. Well, I really got into engineering in the last 3.5 years, like, really got into it. And I really stepped up my game. Like, I've been collecting microphones for 20 years. You know, crazy outdoor gear. Like, you know, I've gone down the rabbit hole for sure. I have a problem. Okay. But I love every aspect of it. And I'm so grateful for the pandemic in a lot of ways, because it forced me to really learn about, you know, engineering. And I love it. It's different than recording in a regular studio, because you're not engineering. That's the number one thing. So I find that when I go into studios now, I'm like, are the bass drum mics in phase? Like, they sound like they're out of phase, or I'm sure I piss a lot of people off. I actually try to be very respectful. Don't get me wrong, but you know, because of all this sort of experience, you can't help but be more aware of what's going on in the studio. So, and I'm always asking questions with engineers, always like, what's that? Why are you putting the mic there? What's that doing? I don't get it. Why are you setting it up that way? I don't. Oh, well, this is, you know, this kind of pattern and blah, blah, blah. And this is, ribbon mics really, really love drums in this, whatever, this kind of position in this room, you know, I'm constantly learning. But the difference is, ultimately, I'm not engineering. I'm performing, and there's a real benefit to that, to be honest. But there's also a lot of beauty to, engineering and performing. I've loved it. I've absolutely loved it.
And one of the things that I have found too is that the first few things I got asked to do, I basically said, yes, I can record drums from home, but I have no idea what I'm doing. So as long as you're okay with me not knowing what I'm doing, then we will learn together. And if it's usable, that's great. And that's how you start. I think sometimes what happens is that we want to wait until everything is perfect before we start doing things. And you don't get better. You don't learn by waiting till everything is perfect. You just have to do it.
No, you know, like, I can give you so many examples of like conversations I would have with engineers that were mixing stuff, and like, very encouraging, but they'd say, you might want to try this. You might want to try that. And I'm constantly learning. It's a heavy gig, engineering. You learn to really appreciate what engineers do, you know? I always have, but you don't really appreciate it until you've tried it, you know? And that moment when you actually send tracks, when you're done the tracks and you press send on your WeTransfer account, and you're like, oh man, here we go. You know, you're crossing your fingers, and you know, and there's times when you get a call back and they say, great, thanks, loved it. And there's also the times when they call and they say, yeah, it's not like really the approach. Can we try something different? And, you know, we never stop learning, man. So like, yeah, like another difference is that when you're recording at home, you're not getting instant feedback, right? So when you're in a studio environment and there's a producer there and other musicians, and you're getting, it's a different experience altogether, to be honest with you. Okay. Cause you're by yourself. And so you find that you're talking to yourself when you're at home. You're like, is that what they're looking for? Like, you don't really know. You can send them MP3s, but a lot of the times it's 2 o'clock in the morning when I'm recording. I record at this time of night when it's really quiet.
One of the things that I also have found about this experience is that because you're always learning, sometimes it's faster for me to redo another take than it is for me to try and figure out how to edit the take that I just did to fix that one spot, because I still have a lot of stuff to learn, but I'm really enjoying the process. Whereas I think if I had to do this like 10, 15 years ago, I would have been too intimidated to start. So for me, one of the blessings that I got from the pandemic was time. And I didn't want to waste my time. I wanted to use my time to grow and to build my skill set.
Well, the growth mindset again, right? It comes back. I think if Hayden was alive today, I don't think he'd believe it, you know? I think he'd be really happy though. He'd be quite proud. He was a growth mindset guy for sure. But no, I've, I like again, you know, there's nothing like feeling that feedback and a vibe when you're in a studio, because you could, like, we've all been there where you're in a studio situation and you're playing something and, you know, silence, and then you can hear the talk back, you know, but have a day, and you're like, yeah, can we try something different, you know, can you go to the ride cymbal, blah 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 blah, like it's instant, like the feedback is instant. So yeah, again, therein lies a real huge difference in both disciplines. You're recording, but completely different experiences, really.
And when one is self-critical, when they find themselves having to engineer and record their own sessions, it can be a very long, tedious process, because now we have to make the decision rather than having someone else in the room that gets to make the decision for us.
Yeah, in a way, you're kind of producing, right? You're kind of producing well, like you're clearly engineering, but you are kind of producing, unless, you know, of course the parts are written out for you, and I've done those too. But yeah, it's a different beast, but, I just chalk it up to, like, well, that's, you know, it's an upright bass and that's an electric bass. It's a different experience. They're both basses, but they're different vibes. It's kind of the same thing.
If you look back at some of the projects that you have done, are there any particular things that you would say best define you as a creative artist?
That would define me as a creative artist?
That you would present to someone and say, this project here, I'm very proud of, and this really helps to define what I'm trying to say, what best represents who I am.
Not, you know, Michael, nothing that I can really think of right now, to be honest with you. I think, like, you know, truthfully, I try and react to whatever kind of situation is presented at the time. Sometimes it's like original material that I've written. Sometimes, but most of the time, it's original material that other people have written. And I think, you know, I try to be as present as possible in those moments, and as genuine as possible. And whatever comes out is what I hope is representative of who I am, you know?
What are the things these days that bring the most joy to your life?
Okay. Are you speaking specifically with music?
Anything. Music, family, experiences.
Yeah, I mean, you know, watching my daughter play soccer, watching my daughter dance, playing, you know, catch with my boys, you know, having checking in with my wife and talking about some heavy stuff, sometimes stuff that are, you know, sometimes you know, the difficult conversations. Those are really important. I'm feeling very lucky to be in this situation as a father and a husband. Musically, I'm excited about all the things that I'm doing, like all of it. They all seem to be very creative. The personnel are all people that I absolutely adore. And yeah, there's nothing really specific or no artist that sort of comes to mind where I go, that's it. Like, I just feel like I'm in a very fortunate place, you know?
If you look back through your career and you have people to come up now that are just starting out at earlier stages of their career, looking for advice, what advice do you give them?
Well, I think the big question that always comes up in my mind is, like, what is your intention? Like, truly, what is your intention? Why are you doing this? I know why I do it. It makes me feel good. I love it. I love music as much now as I did when I first started playing or started listening to music. Check in with yourself and make sure that you love it. Everyone has sort of different motivations, right? Like, I can't speak on everyone else's behalf, but obviously, but I know that the reason why I still do it is because I still have a real passion for it. I have a real curiosity. I realize that I haven't even scratched the surface, which excites me. I feel like as musicians, we're so lucky we can do this until we die, you know, or are physically able, I should say. Yeah, but I would just say, I would also say, like, enjoy the moment, enjoy the journey, enjoy the now. Don't be so concerned about back there. Don't be so concerned about what's going to happen, what you think will happen, or what you want to happen. I mean, it's great to have goals, but appreciate the moment now. Now, the great Dave Young once said to me, it doesn't matter what you did last night or where you've played or who you've played with. What's important is what you're going to do tonight. And we were playing a gig that night and we went for a walk. And I'll never forget it, you know, ever for the rest of my life. So what matters is what you're going to do tonight. Okay. So, yeah.
I think that's a fantastic place to end. Davide, it has been an unbelievable pleasure getting a chance to connect with you today.
Michael, the pleasure was mine. And I hope to meet you one of these days. And I hope to hear you play the drums as well. That would make me very happy.
We'll find a way to connect in person, and I look forward to the opportunity.
Thank you, man. I wish you continued success too, by the way, with this podcast and your musical journey.
You as well.
Thank you, brother.
You've been listening to the Drummer's Pathway podcast. Please share and subscribe to get the word out, and let's keep the discussion going. Thanks for listening. And I'll see you next time.